And now on Sunday night, it's great to say hello once again to Tom Roberts of the National Catholic Reporter in the United States. Tom, welcome.
Very good to be with you, John.
Tom, it seems that local is global is becoming very true in the Catholic Church. Just in our last hour, we had a discussion with Paul Collins and Bill Morris in Australia, two people who've been involved in a recent letter to Rome. And, of course, this involves a number of people in the United States as well.
You know, I just think it's a really good sign of health that these discussions can be entertained and the people can feel the freedom to broach these sort of issues. I think there are signals all over the lot that there's a changed atmosphere and that the fear level, which was quite high in some circles during the John Paul II and Benedict Deers, is really leveling off, and people feel free to raise questions that are, I think, quite natural in the community.
And this goes as far as probably the most eminent of the dissident voices of the last 20 years, and that's Hans Küng, in a conversation, albeit by mail at this stage, with Pope Francis.
Yes, you know, and he asked the Pope for a really serious consideration of the question of infallibility, and that's been one of Brother Kuhn's themes for a long time, and he got a response back from the Pope. He has not released the text of the response, but said it is quite favorable and friendly, that the Pope invites a discussion, and he just didn't shut it down. I just think that that's one of those kinds of signs of health. I'll mention another one that happened really locally here in Maryland, where I live. There was a lecture given by Father Charles Curran, who was one of those theologians in the United States who was really disciplined under the John Paul II papacy. And he was giving the lecture on the grounds of a religious order's campus at a chapel, and the chapel was filled with people who were supportive of New Ways Ministry, which is a ministry to gays and lesbians in the church. He was introduced by Sister Janine Gramick, who was also disciplined by the church for her, for her advocacy for gays within the church, and Father Curran spoke rather enthusiastically for 40 minutes of a living pope. The change is in the air. That's all I can say. It's really an interesting phenomenon going on, I think.
And another issue which almost escaped attention in the light of the Pope's exhortation released in the last couple of weeks was that Pax Christi, the international Catholic organization, began to talk about the theory of just war at a Vatican-hosted conference.
Yes, and I think that, you know, Pax Christi has been a really steady force and a witness since just after World War II, trying to hold up the tradition in the Catholic Church of peacemaking and finding space for that kind of theology and outlook. And I think that one of the big takeaways from this conference was the just war theory this group put on the table. They wanted it replaced or done in, if you will, because it's become irrelevant in an era of, you know, massive possibilities of massive destruction and a lot of other considerations. I don't know that it will go away completely. I mean, I think there's something to say for centuries of thinking on this subject, but the idea that these questions can be raised, the Pope reacted favorably to it in a statement to the conference, and then goes on and lets it be known that he may well be doing, some sort of a paper, maybe an encyclical on it. And just to, I think today or yesterday, we learned that there's an Italian news outlet that's saying they've heard that he may make it the subject of the next Bishop's Synod, World Peace. So it's a really interesting development, and especially for Catholics in a place like the United States, where I think the militarism is subtle but so pervasive. We display our priority as a country by the amount we spend on the military. Period, and the amount of symbolism and imagery that's in our culture that has to do with militarism and the endless wars. And so I think that's going to be an enormous countercultural challenge for Catholics here. But I think it's an enormously interesting and positive step.
And it plays consistently also with his recent papal exhortation coming out of the Synod on the Family, where he's looking at attitudinal change generally, even subtly and not so subtly.
Yeah, there again, I think a lot of that, the reaction to it has been, and I did a reaction story with a number of, you know, thinkers and theologians and, you know, ordinary people. And if there's a way to characterize the most general response to it, it's a sort of breath out relief that there's space being created. And it goes along the lines of the way he's approached all these issues. People are frustrated. Well, they're frustrated on the right because they feel as if he's compromising the church and the rigid legality that really defined membership in the church and orthodoxy and all the rest for the last three decades. But people on the other extreme are frustrated at times because he's not saying this is the law that's going to be changed. And I think that he's looking at a global church, and he's not going to blow it up. But what he is going to say out of the heart of the gospel, and his reference is always the gospel and especially parables that illustrate his points, that we can make space, that there is in his own hierarchy of how to govern, the law settles down at a lower place than pastoral outlooks. The person before him is always important. And that really comes through in this exhortation.
This attitudinal change is beginning to stretch, even not just on general exhortations to be nice to each other, but I understand that his recent Pontifical Commission on Latin America, he addressed one of the continuing issues that is attitudinal but nevertheless has substance, and that's the issue of clericalism.
It's a theme that he keeps hitting and hitting, and I think it is a central work of this papacy that doesn't get enough. I mean, it's beginning to get a lot of play, but I was convinced from the very beginning that one of the major works he was about that wasn't sort of categorizable or quantifiable was his deflation of the clerical culture. And this last one to the Latin American was really powerful. He says that looking to the people of God is to remember that we all made our entrance into the church as lay people. The first sacrament is baptism. The first and fundamental consecration sinks its roots in our baptism. No one is baptized a priest or a bishop. They baptized us as lay people, and it is the indelible sign that no one can ever wipe away. He says that the church is not an elite of priests, of consecrated people, of bishops, but that everyone forms the holy, faithful people of God. This idea of service is paramount, and he demonstrates that all the time. I think it's more than words, so it really begins to have an effect, I think. He even talks about, he warns about clericalism of the laity, in a sense, by saying to priests and bishops, don't look on, you know, on people who work for the church as the only really holy lay people. Know that people are exercising their baptism in the workplace, in the public square. And so there's a kind of he really emphasizes to doing away with a kind of clerical haughtiness and churchy sort of superiority. And I think there's a great resonance to it.
Could be a paragraph from a Morris West novel whose centenary we celebrated this week.
I know, and I really mean this. From a few days after he was elected, when he was doing all those things that were sort of just went against protocol and tradition and history, I started saying to a colleague, and I've said it countless times since, that I feel like I'm living in the middle of a Morris West novel, you know, and by this point we're sort of in volume 15, I think. He just keeps on, the authenticity leads him to striking symbolism and ways of acting that you realize in retrospect, if you're looking at a leader out of the gospel, maybe shouldn't be so striking, but because I think things were so far off course, at that leadership level, it really is stunning to watch him exercise a whole different way of being a pope.
Well, let's go to his wider influence now. And just we're watching the American election process unfold through the primaries. Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, particularly, running off to catch a photo op with the Pope. Bernie took the opportunity. But is the sort of tone Francis is setting having an impact on the way bishops are treating their pastorals to the people during this election campaign? Because in other years, they haven't been quiet when they felt the need to express themselves.
Right, and I think one of it may be a Francis effect. It may be, but that there is simply no one out there this year who fits any of the molds. You may get a Cruz who is really strictly anti-abortion. Trump makes some of those noises, but he has not been that way in the past. And Cruz is an extremely ideological candidate. Trump seems to be. Who knows? Whatever fits. There doesn't seem to be either an ideological core or a philosophical core there. Some of it is just common sense. Some of it is outlandish. So I don't know that the bishops have anybody to land on. They certainly can't promote Sanders if the issue they're most concerned with, Sanders or Clinton, if the issue they're most concerned with is abortion. And that hasn't worked well for them in the past, and so maybe with the influence of this Pope, they're laying off those kinds of, one-issue endorsements. I just think it's a very, very confusing and complex year. They may be voicing something else as the year goes on, but we also know that the document they put out every 4 years called Faithful Citizenship, which is supposed to be a kind of guide for Catholic citizenship and voting, is just pretty much a wash this year because it's a really light rewrite of a document that's been in place for, I think, maybe 12 years, something like that. So I don't think that there's much discussion on the Episcopal level on what's going on.
There's a local story here, of course, which has a resonance in the Vatican still, and that's the Vatican finances. The story still goes on, and two apparently or seemingly contradictory stories in the last few days regarding the responsibilities exercised by Cardinal George Pell. That is that on one hand, there's news that the more rigorous imposition of transparency regulations is bearing fruit and lots more reporting of irregularities. Yet at the same time, the commission instituted by George Pell has had some of its operations suspended. The Price Waterhouse investigation has been suspended. How much of this is politics and how much of this is simple sort of process? Well, I sort a few things out.
Am I allowed to take myself at least partially off the hook on this one? Because financial stories make my head explode at times. And I don't know. I don't get real deep in the weeds on this. But it seems to me from our reporting, and Josh McElwee has done a lot of it on this, that there are two streams, as you're saying. One is that the financial watchdog agency and mechanism that was set up under Benedict but really reinforced and broadened under Francis is really working, and it's sort of like an increase in arrests because you've hired more cops. And this is an increase in discovery of suspicious activity, is what they're calling it. Funny business with money because they're just scrutinizing it a lot more. The thing with Price Waterhouse, I think, has more to do. And as you've said and the speculation on two sides is this politics inside the institution, and is Cardinal Pell annoyed that they would hire an outside agency, or are other people upset that they're going to be looked at by an outside agency, or is it a matter of process and they're discovering that, I think contractually they've got to slow down and figure out more details. I understand that it's the latter, that it's more prudential matter than politics inside the Curia.
Tom Roberts, we appreciate your insights. Every time you can join us, it's a great pleasure to have you with us again. Tom Roberts of the National Catholic Reporter, thanks so much for joining us on Sunday night.
John, always a pleasure from this side. Thank you.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.